Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Yeah, I think, you know, him being young in age definitely allows him to be more in tune with this, you know, generation and kind of where things are headed towards. But also his respect for players, his ability to push players is something that he's found a great balance of, and I appreciate that. You know, he'll love you up, but he'll also push you to your limits and try to make you the best version of yourself. So that's nothing, you know, you would ever want, you know, from a coach like him. He's everything you want, and I'm very appreciative of that. And just within my 7 months, you know, everything that he said, he's kept his word. And it's something that, you know, like I said, is different.
Dylan Gabriel talking about Dan Lanning. Is it true that Dan Lanning being young helps him to relate to players? Is that a strength? Is that true? Is that accurate? Our next guest is a former Washington Husky defensive back who was an assistant coach at Oregon State. He was the head coach at Portland State. You saw him on the Pac-12 Network's coverage, mixing it up. And you will catch him this season on the CW. Friend of the show, Nigel Burton, joining us now. Is it true that a young head coach has a better rapport with players? Is that a strength?
Maybe. I mean, I think you definitely... just from an energy perspective, you know, I definitely had more energy in my 20s than I do now, having just turned 48. But, I mean, you know what's funny is I remember coaching at Oregon State. I think I was 26. And the guys were talking on the field about the show, and they were dying. And they kept, like, spitting these lines from it. And I'm like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. You know, I don't even have time to keep up with pop culture. And they were reciting lines from the Chappelle Show. I'm 26. I don't even know what the hell they're talking about. Because I'm working, you know, 80-hour weeks, and I don't have time to, like, keep up on much of anything. But, you know, I think it can be. But I think it's a double-edged sword, too, man. Sometimes having some perspective and, you know, some of the things that just come with years in the business and wisdom and things like that can also be just as helpful, if not more. So it's kind of neither here nor there. It's more particular to the guy.
Let me ask you, here we are, like, week zero. The Ducks are, you know, what, 9-10 days away from playing a football game. Beavers the same. Most teams are. But players are probably itching to play somebody. Coaches probably feeling like they're running out of time. I mean, what's that like? You've been there as a player, you've been there as an assistant, you've been there as a head coach. Is there ever enough time when you're a head coach, or are you ready to see your team play somebody else? And as a player, like, you've just been hitting each other since the spring, it's got to feel like it can't come fast enough.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Players are like, we would have played a game like 2 weeks ago. Coaches are like, if you could give me two more months of camp, I'll take it. You know,
right.
So, you know, it's interesting because all the schools here in the Northwest, except for Washington State, right, Oregon State, Oregon, Washington, Portland State, on down, are quarter schools. And it's a major advantage being a quarter school, because what happens is, you know, a lot of these schools, you know, the Colorados, the USCs, I believe, you know, of the world, you know, they're all on semesters. So not only are they preparing for their first game and kind of getting in game week mode, but they're also, you know, hey, they got to go to class. I know a lot of kids are taking online courses now, but there's still an element of just, you know, people moving on the campus, kids moving in the dorms. It's just hectic. It's distracting. Quarter schools, they don't start school until the end of September. So, you know, for the first 4 weeks, sometimes five of the season, like, you're a professional football player. Like, your whole focus is ball. You're not going to class. There's no students on campus. I know a lot of times it gets kind of spun as, like, a disadvantage because of student section and games. But I don't know how a whole lot of players and coaches would trade that student section for the just, you know, unadulterated time that they can just lock in on ball. And so, you know, I think for a lot of those schools, you just have the ability to really start fast because that's all you're doing is football. Even as these guys are starting school in, you know, in late August, you got a whole month where you're just like, and I wake up, I watch film, I work out, we have practice, I work out again, I stretch, recover, and I watch more film. Whereas the other guys are trying to go to biology class, deal with girlfriends, moving into dorms, the roommates snoring, you know, parties in the hallways, all that stuff that, you know, these other places just don't have to worry about.
Nigel Burton with us, the CW. I think it's great perspective. And yeah, that quarter thing is something people don't think about. But, you know, offensive, defensive coaches, I always feel like in camp, the defenses tend to have their way. I don't know, but do you know when you have a good team and you're in camp, or do you need to see it on the field before you actually know it? Well, you've been there.
Oh, no, you know. You probably know before you start camp. I mean, unless you're a new staff, no, you definitely know. You know when you have special kids. You know, the time you really figure it out is actually when you're not around, right? It's when the coaches aren't around. It's in the summer, the workouts. You know, because you'll run into kids or they'll come in the office, you know, they want to watch film or, you know, whatever, just ask you questions over the summer. And, you know, when you're kind of getting feedback, you know, a lot of times, like, we would get feedback on kids who were new. That was always the cool part. Like, you'll be sitting there, you think you have a class, and the veterans come in, they're like, hey, man, this dude, ballers, you know? Or, you know, yeah, hey, you know, we had a team workout. Everybody was there, coach. Energy was great. Like, that's when you know, okay, this, you know, not just from a talent perspective, but that you got some cohesion, you got leadership. And then you got those years where it's like, you know, you're watching guys, you know, you're walking by the field and you see two guys throwing and nobody else. And you're like, oh, this ain't good. You know, this is bad, you know. So, no, they definitely know whether they've got something special going on.
Nigel Burton with us. Look, you were the head coach at Portland State. I got to ask you this. Like, this week, the president at Portland State, who, by the way, you probably would have loved to have as your president. She's banging the drum. She knows where the football team is. She knows where the basketball gymnasium is. Like, the first president, I think, at Portland State in my time that gives a rip about sports. But she wants to play a game back downtown. She wants to bring the team back downtown. In your mind, what was your initial reaction when you heard that?
I mean, one, absolutely. I just had we had a deal celebrating, you know, getting ready for the season, you know, over at the Porter Hotel, Coin, and the local CW station. You know, it was this kind of kickoff event. It was super dope. And one of the comments I made was, you know, are there any relatives of university presidents here in the room? And nobody raised their hand. And I was like, they're weird people. Like, they are strange. There's not a whole lot of, I have yet to meet a whole lot of cool ones. And what's really strange is, you know, when, you know, this, obviously the just this catastrophic changes in college athletics, so many of the decisions are ultimately being made by university presidents who really don't understand sport. And it's not that important to them. They say it is, but for most of them, it's not. And so to hear her really, you know, understand how important it is for Portland State to get back downtown, I thought was huge. It showed her grasp of not just, you know, athletics, but, you know, how vital it is for them to be downtown. And, you know, it's just such an odd bird, man. You know, like, one of the stories I talked about that night, that evening at the Porter, was, you know, you have some schools right now that are making decisions on conference affiliation based on how they see themselves academically. Like, well, we're better academically than those schools over there, so, yeah, we don't really want to pair up. And they're literally flying across the country now because they feel like they're better academic. You know, and it's like, wait, what? Like, you understand the student-athletes could care less about that in terms of their travel. And in the grand scheme of things, we're talking about sport. And you're bringing it back to, and it makes sense because that's what they know. They don't understand sport. They understand the academic rigors. They understand the academic side, and that's what computes to them. And I think, you know, unfortunately, I just think there's a lot of stakeholders who were ignored in a lot of these processes, and a lot of us, including the fans, paid for it.
You're going to be calling games on the CW. Ted Robinson, Ryan Leaf, I am told, will also be part of the broadcast crew, among others. You know, that's going to be a national thing. I mean, I think you're going to probably be seen by more people this season, potentially, as all the CW affiliates nationally will be carrying these games.
Yeah, no question. No question. Ryan actually hit me this morning. He said, hey, I guess we're going to spend some time together. I said, yeah, who's making the tee times? So he said he would. So, you know, make sure you lock that one in. Ryan made a promise. He's going to follow through on that. But, yeah, I think for these two schools, you know, again, the comment I made that night at the Porter was, I don't think two programs have made chicken salad out of chicken you-know-what better than what Oregon State and Washington State pulled off. I mean, not only, you know, from a financial standpoint and all the things that, you know, happened with the exit of all the other schools, but, you know, they went from being in 17 or 15% of households to 100%. People with bunny ears in the middle of nowhere in Mississippi will be able to watch Oregon State and Washington State football in prime time, you know, not at, you know, 10 o'clock Eastern and things like that. A lot of the games are going to be in that 3, 4, 5 o'clock slot. And so, I mean, that is massive for two programs that always struggled to get, you know, national recognition for the work that they were doing and the wins that they were putting together. 10-win seasons going ignored. Now they're in every single home, and nobody needs any sort of sports package to get them. I think it's going to be it's a massive win for those two programs.
Have you guys figured out at all what games you'll be on in the early part of the season, or is it a lot of this stuff still to be determined as the season unfolds?
I got a rough idea of my schedule. My first game will be Portland State at Washington State with Ryan and Ted in the Palouse, and I'm glad it worked out that way, because actually I was originally going to do the Oregon State game at 3:30, and that game's at noon up in Pullman, and then I'm going to try to race. If you see me on the freeway after that game, please get out of the way, because I'm going to be then jumping on a plane from Spokane to Seattle to go watch my kids' first game at the University of Washington. They kick off at 8, so I'm hoping I can make the flight and get a chance to see him run out and all those things. So it's a family affair for us, and it's yeah, it's going to be awesome. I can't wait. But, yeah, I've got a general idea. I'll probably be involved with half or most of the games this year, and then okay. You know, we'll see kind of what the future holds.
I think it's going to be exciting to see what happens on the CW. Will you always be on site, or will you do some studio work? Do you know yet?
I don't. I think it's pretty fluid. I mean, I think originally I heard three different names of people who were gonna I was gonna be matched up with on these, you know, road games, and then I learned about Ryan from your tweet. So you know, yeah, I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then Ryan hit me up, but it's awesome. And I've worked with Ryan, you know, a bunch of times before. We just played golf this week, this past summer. By the way, he's the biggest sandbagger of all time. So if you ever find yourself on a course with Ryan Leaf, he will beat you, and he will claim a handicap, a solid 10 above what he really is. He's an amazing golfer. He's a great guy, and I think we'll have great energy. And I've known Ted for, you know, over a decade. So I think it's just going to be a fantastic team and great insight from, you know, a bunch of us who know the conference and you know, and know these teams really well.
Nigel, speaking of these teams, Washington State, you probably looked at a little bit because you got the game. You know, they're going to start John Mateer at quarterback. They've got Wayshon Parker, great freshman running back. But just in general, Jake Dickert's got guys coming back. He's got a lot of retention outside of the quarterback position. Just speaking kind of in general terms about this team, how much of an advantage is that to have a bunch of your starters back, a bunch of your depth back? Yes, you have a new starter at quarterback because there's no Cam Ward, but how valuable is that to Washington State?
Oh, I think it's massive. I mean, especially when you consider, you know, one of their biggest games, you know, here early in the season. I mean, they've got, you know, obviously they have Portland State, and then they get Texas Tech at home, and then they travel to Seattle, and they play the Huskies, who just played the national championship game, who might as well have not played in the national championship game because the team is completely different, you know, and I think, you know, what Jed Fish is trying to figure out about his team, and he's going to be kind of doing it on the fly, whereas, you know, obviously, you know, there in Pullman, I mean, they know, you know, Coach Dickert knows who he's got, and, you know, for the first time, I remember, you know, I think Alex Brink mentioned it, was, you know, this is a defensive-led Washington State team. You know, they've always been good on offense. They'll be good again on offense. But this is the first time when you kind of look at the dudes and you're like, God, they got a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball. And so, you know, those are the things I think ultimately, especially when you're a program that's just always been good on offense and the defense has kind of been the thing that's cost you, now that you've kind of turned that corner, I mean, that's the thing that kind of, you know, that's championship pedigree type of things that can happen to your program.
Nigel Burton with us, the CW. On Oregon's side, it's a little different. A lot of expectations. I think the expectations have never been higher. Third-ranked team. Everybody's penciling them into the Big Ten championship game. What are we not thinking about, Nigel, as it pertains to the Ducks?
You know, I think a couple of things. I think, one, I think Dan Lanning has probably learned more on the fly and has survived it. You know, I think a lot of places, I mean, you know, let's be honest, it's been well documented, some of the decisions that have been made that, you know, may or may not have cost them games in the past and would have cost a lot of coaches their jobs. But I think at Oregon they had faith that, you know, as he continued to grow as a head coach, he kind of figured out. I think that part's going to be good. You know, as you go through the season, it's going to be a lot of just like, how does your depth hold up, especially when you're in such a punishing conference like the Big Ten. You know, I think the Big Ten is going to have to adjust to Oregon and Washington and, you know, USC and UCLA's play more than the other way around. Because the Pac-12 has always, I mean, we've been the most underrated physical conference. It's, I've played in it and coached in it. There are people who knock your face mask out of the back of your skull. That ain't never been a thing. I think the wide open spread, you know, skill level that you see, that's something that I think a lot of the Big Ten's going to have to get used to. And so as long as they're able to hold up, I think it's going to be a phenomenal season for the Ducks.
Nigel, I appreciate you making time for us. Let's just on your kid a little bit, because you've been through it as a player at Washington, your kid's at Washington playing. What has that been like, you know, and you're going to try to make that game. What has that been like for you to kind of be in touch with your kid as he goes through camp?
You know, the recruiting process was, you know, it's funny. People, I think, out there think that it's just this, like, really cool thing to go through. And as I was trying to explain to my wife as he was entering the process, it's only cool for, like, 15-20% of the student athletes out there. Okay. For 80%, even the five-star guys, it's a terrible thing. Like, it's not something that most guys look back on fondly, because, you know, it's for the first time young men and young women get lied to by grown people that they think they can trust. And so it's hard. And he luckily, two different staffs, from Kalen DeBoer to Jed Fish, man, they really opened their arms to him. And we were very, very blessed and lucky. I went up to Seattle about 10 days ago to go, you know, just kind of check on my kid, right? And right. I didn't care about the – it was the alumni event stuff. And I was like, yeah, I saw my old teammates. And I'm like, yeah, I saw Warren Moon. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. I just want to make sure he's okay. And my buddy was with me. And when we left, he said, you know, that kid had a smile on his face from the time we saw him at lunch until we left. And I was like, as a dad, that's all I cared about. Like, I could care less about football. I just – you know, all that stuff, like, however that works out is how it works out. You know, you just want to make sure that your kid is cared about. And Kevin Cummings is his receivers coach there, who played at Oregon State. Awesome, awesome human being. Trained by one of the best in Mike Riley. And, you know, he's happy. I'm happy.
And I love that. He played offense. He played defense at Jesuit. What's he playing at Washington?
He's playing receiver. I told him, I said, you know, the reason I was a DB because my dad didn't play catch with me enough. Well, I didn't have great hands. I said, kid, just so we're clear, if this works out, just, you know, give your dad a shout out, because we played catch all the time. That's why you got he's got great hands, and he understands the game because he's been around it, and it's gonna be fun. And what's really been fun too is just watching a lot of the kids that, you know, we kind of all kind of came up with, you know, out here in Portland that have gone on and. you know, Jaden at Arizona State, and all these different guys have gone to all these different places, and it's just been really fun, you know, to see, you know, you know, Portland, the city of Portland, and Oregon and Southwest Washington football has just really taken this massive leap, and I think you're really seeing it. You know, you've got I don't know why I just spaced on Sam's last name, but from Westview High School is now the starting quarterback at Arizona State. Like, you're just seeing all these guys go
Levitt.
Sam Levitt, yeah. I mean, all these guys are just doing all this great stuff, man, and it's so cool to watch. And they all still support each other, you know, and, you know, they're at different schools, but they're, you know, reposting each other's things, you know, from different schools, that, you know, because they're like, hey, man, you know, we're all still boys. And it's just been a really wonderful thing to experience from as a parent and these kids that have kind of were your surrogate kids. So
I love
it. His roommate at Washington is Elias Johnson, who's played with it at Jesuit. So it's been really a blessing.
Nigel Burton on the CW. Can't wait to see you there. Thanks, Nigel. Leave it here. You got the BFT.